This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM.
And we are indeed live. And this is Brooke Spector. This is The Deep Dive. And I have a special guest today, somebody I'm really delighted to have a chance to talk with, even though it's a somber subject that we have to discuss. And I get our guest, of course, is Janice Honeyman, well known as a director, as a creator of plays and dramas and lighthearted works. I'm sure many in the audience have seen more than one version of her pantomime that became a regular seasonal work in this city for decades, I guess. But Janice is not simply the pantomime creator of note. Her history in drama and the theater is much larger than that. She went to the University of Cape Town. It must have been a very interesting class. You had all kinds of fascinating people with you at that period. You did work at the Space Theater when it was just opening, and it was for South Africa, it was a unique venue. In that everybody was welcome to come in and attend and participate and perform back in the 60s and early 70s, well, I guess the early 70s. And one of the things that I noticed in reviewing your life, that you acted in a version of an Ethel Fugard play, Hello and Goodbye. I hope you remember it, because that's the topic of our conversation, Ethel Fugard, who passed away at the age of 92 on the 9th of March. When I did my checking on his life, there were more than 30 dramas that came from his pen. Some of them were co-authored with the team of John Connie and Winston and Shona, but most of them came from his own imagination and his own background. But Janice, welcome for this conversation. I'm so glad you could join us.
Thank you very much. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you, and of course to talk about someone like Ethel Fugard, who was a friend and a colleague and a theatre friend through and through. Very, very valuable in my life always. And yes, Hello and Goodbye was seminal for me. It was a life changer, really. And that was Ethel and Barney Simon, who directed me in Hello and Goodbye.
Now, a lot of people think of Ethel Fugard as somebody who wrote protest theater, and I don't think that's, I think that's far too limiting to describe. And Hello and Goodbye is a particularly somber kind of work. It's got some funny moments in it, maybe, but it all of his work until really the latter part of his life seemed to be trying to balance both anger and empathy, in my mind. On the one hand, there was a deep feeling of anger about the social system of the country and the political structures that went with it. But there was this enormous empathy toward the characters that he created on stage. And unlike so many other of the protest theater works, you very rarely hear any mention of the specifics of the social and political circumstances, but you learn about them through the character's life. It's like you're looking at a very small microscopic view that gradually expands as the conversation goes on. Am I looking at it the right way?
I think so. I think that with Ethel, the personal becomes political in an audience's interpretation of it. So you can find the political in Ethel's plays, but he doesn't set out to write a strictly political play. Athol's plays are always personal, and very often you'll find that they are autobiographical. So something like Hello and Goodbye is written out of love, really, but Athol just simply can't help reflecting the social situation. And you know, you spoke about protest theatre. I think that when I think about it, protest theatre as such, when it kind of finally got labelled as to what it was way after Athol had actually started writing and had delivered all those personal plays like The Blood Knot and Nongogo and what was that play, No Good Friday. All of those were political in their final analysis, but actually it was Athol with his feelings for human nature, with his feelings of indignation at the situation that people were put into, and his really deep understanding of human beings and the life that they had to live in this country. So it was passionate, and it was deep, and it was thoughtful, and it was sometimes almost voyeuristic in some ways, that he looked so carefully at people's lives, and he understood them with such, as you said, empathy. And with Athol, you always knew, and that's why he taught us as younger people so much, is that there was not a phrase in those plays, any of those plays, that didn't have some human quality, human interest, and human message. That's why you can't really cut Athol. You can't cut his texts, because all of it has meaning.
I hadn't thought of that before. I mean, some of his plays do, I mean, as a person sitting in a chair watching them, some of them do run, quote unquote, a little bit long for my aged, increasingly aged back. But you're quite right. It's almost impossible to look at a text and say, oh, well, we'll take out this little bit here and this little bit there, because it's all brickwork piled up nicely and neatly.
Absolutely. And you see, Brooks, I think what I learned from Athol and from Barney is that each and every phrase has to be truly lived, and then it won't be boring, because it will have the color, the texture, the back message, it will all be there, and so it will be interesting, because an audience will be recognizing and identifying. If you are glib, and I have a very strict thing that I do with actors when I'm directing a fugard, I do not allow middle distance fugard. You know, you sometimes get actors who go into, and then I thought about my mother. And I thought to myself, my mother's dress smells. You have to be absolutely specific. You can't waft with fugard. You've got to be specific with every line, every phrase that you, and you have to visualize with every phrase that you use of fugard's, because he does when he writes it, and you owe him that honor.
To me, and maybe this is enormously personal for me, the single most poignant, visible, memorable moment in any play that I can recall having seen by him, and it's one of the co-authored ones, Says We Bonzi Is Dead, on the face of the character Says We Bonzi, played by, I guess, the times I've seen it, Winston and Shona, when he finally realizes that he is going to take on a new identity, which will liberate him, quote unquote, from the monstrous difficulties he has in life, if only he embraces this new person that just happens to have been dead. And the smile on Winston's face as it finally dawns on him what is actually happening. It's a wordless moment, but it just sticks in my mind forever.
It's a moment of sheer golden brilliance, theatrical life. It's theatrical life. It just burnt, it scintillated. And you know, Brooks, I went overseas at the time that Says We Bonzi was on at the market. And when we had been working towards mixed audiences, plays that were not Eurocentric. We had been working and working towards that. And when I got back from overseas, the first thing I did on the day I arrived back was go straight to the market. And I got there 2 minutes late. And there was a completely mixed audience with John Carney and Winston Chawner on stage doing Sizwe Bunzi and roaring with laughter, just roaring and applauding. And I just thought, the miracle has happened. The miracle has happened while I was away. And Attle was doing it. You know, it was just fantastic.
We're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back with our conversation with Janice Honeyman, director, actor, thinker about theater, creator of many theatrical works herself. We're talking about the late Attle Fugard.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
I guess we are live and we're back. And I am indeed Brooke Spector. And my guest today, I'm really, really delighted, Janice Honeyman. Actress, director, theater conceiver. But we're not talking about her work particularly. We're talking about that of Attle Fugard, who passed away less than a week ago in Stellenbosch at the age of 92, having created some 30 different plays, most of them from his own pen, a few important ones as co-creations with John Carney and Winston and Shona. He wrote a novel, Tsotsi, which became an Academy Award-winning film, man of many talents, obviously. He directed some of his own work. He acted in some of its most extraordinary performances. Janice, we've talked a little bit about his effect on audiences, and you describe passionately you're rushing back overseas to storm into the Market Theater to watch Sizwe Bunzi Is Dead. But I want to ask you about his effect on actors and younger playwrights. What did he do to you and your colleagues in that part of the creative universe?
Brooks, Attle, I must just, on a personal level, I'm eternally grateful to him for changing my entire outlook on theatre. I met him 55 years ago. The day was the world premiere of Busman and Lena, and I was in Grahamstown, Makanda, in those days, and it was an English conference. It wasn't even the Grahamstown Festival, and Attle was sawing a log of wood outside the Rhodes Theatre. He was this little guy sawing with his energy going up. And it was the opening night of Busman and Lena. And I was with Manny, actually. I just met Manny that day as well, or the night before. And there was Attle sawing his own log of wood to go onto the stage that night. And then I saw this life-changing play, an amazing different new approach with Yvonne Briceland, Attle, and an actor called Glyn Day. In those days, he was playing Ota. And from then on, with that completely different response to theatre, wasn't that glib English stuff that we'd been seeing for so long in Johannesburg. It wasn't that English kind of polished rep theatre. It was this raw, wonderful, passionate kind of interpretation of South African life. And then over time, once we started the Market Theatre, obviously we all got to know Attle much more closely. And we mixed with him. We used to have late night Tassenberg drinking meetings, round tables, and eating and drinking and talking. And Attle would be our mentor because he would tell us what he believed theatre could do. And so we changed our way of thinking. And then, of course, when I played Hello and Goodbye, the approach to finding the honesty, finding the truth in his texts was what one absolutely had to do. And as I said earlier, the specifics of what a character is feeling, going through, being, and how you as an actress had to identify with that. And that the same happened with directing. I needed to put that into my directing as well. So Ethel taught me. And then one of the big changes for me was that I got a telephone call one day after I'd done Hello and Goodbye, acted in it. And it was an overseas call from someone called Bill Alexander, who I had forgotten that I even knew the name. I said, "This is Bill Alexander. Hello, can I help you?" He said, "Bill Alexander." I said, "Yes." "Bill Alexander from the RSC, the Royal Shakespeare Company." I mean, completely gauche, completely. Blah, blah. I said, "I've read your name in Plays and Players." He said, "Goodbye" with Anthony Scher and Estelle Kohler. We asked Ethel Bugard to direct it, but he's unavailable. We asked for a recommendation, and he recommended you. So Ethel gave me my opening to working with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and also reconnecting with Anthony Scher, who I knew when I was a little book, when I was a little child. And I've since done 6 or 7 productions with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and it was Ethel who honored me by recommending me. And so Ethel has played an enormous part from then on. Well, he always has played an enormous part. And I have huge, huge respect for his approach to theatre. And he taught all of us what I said in a little thing I wrote when he died was he was the keeper of the key. And he used to, for all of us young writers and young actors, open the door, let us peep through, look at the world that we want to be in, talk about. And he helped us to see it. He helped us to know it, to believe in it. And once we believed, we could make audiences believe, we could make fellow actors believe. He contributed enormously to our culture.
I didn't mean to interrupt. When I was writing up an article to try to encapsulate his life and his impact, I asked a number of different playwrights and directors for their reactions to his work and his person and his influence. And they all said very much the same kind of thing. He pushed open windows and doors for them to re-understand, to rethink yes. what it was they were doing. One of the things you mentioned right at the beginning of our conversation was his drawing from personal experience. And yes, Master Harold and the Boys came right out of his out of his childhood from his parents' tea room in Port Elizabeth and his yes. interactions with the staff. So much of the rest of his work, though, seemed to have it drew from the impact of his time on a merchant ship with a crew which was entirely not European in nature, and then later as a clerk in a passbook court, in a pass yep. law court in Johannesburg. And that must have been yep. a soul-destroying experience, but nevertheless, he took these personal experiences and reshaped them. Do you see in them, do you see the reality, or do you see what he understood and intuited from it, or do you see both?
You always see both both and more with Ethel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did it in Afrikaans, in fact, but Owen Sajaki played the captain's tiger. Mm-hmm. Doing the captain's tiger, which is a play set on the deck of a boat, with Ethel, the writer, journaling his journey and communicating with the what would one call it, a stevedore? I'm not sure, but the detail of that play was so real and so atmospheric, and the understanding of the character that he was drawing out to write about was so accurate. And when you look at it, and you know that it is Athel's view of a character, but he had such perception and such insight into human nature that it rings absolutely true for an audience. And Athel enabled audiences to relate to characters because he had such an honesty and a truth about how he looked at them. So even in something like Hello and Goodbye, just to hop back to that, that father in the room, because his description of the father, because his bringing to life of a character that we never even see on stage is right. So real. We know that man in that room, or the man's not there in fact anymore, but the pretense, because Johnny can't bear the fact that his father has died, he brings him so to life that we believe in the audience. In the audience, we believe that that man is there. And Athel has that astounding ability to create honest, true life in characters.
I want to go move really forward, right, toward the last couple of works in his output, Exits and Entrances and yes. The Shadow of the Hummingbird. And both of those are in many ways gentle plays. There's anger in them a little bit, but there's an awful lot of learning how to accept. And in Exits and Entrances, he's the apprentice to an aging actor who is really at the end of his career. And there are bits and pieces of all manner of classic works, from the Greek tragedies through to Shakespeare to other things, little moments. And in The Shadow of the Hummingbird, you don't see the hummingbird either, I guess, when you think about it. You just see its shadow. But there's a small boy, and he's trying to, as an old man, which is a sort of a stand-in for Fugard himself, I guess, he's trying to impart to the boy life lessons. You know, quick, grab a hold of this before I'm no longer around to show you. And both of them seem to me to be enormously autobiographical in a funny kind of way, an odd kind of way, perhaps.
Yes. I mean, Exits and Entrances was really a wonderful play to work on. And you know, I was very privileged that Athel gave it to me to do, because it was dealing with his entrance into the theatre as a dresser. He was a dresser, wasn't he? I'm sorry, I've done a few Fugards, so I've got to just sort out in my mind which ones are which. But yes, a dresser, and studying theatre, and this wonderful André Huguenet it was based on, who ended his life tearing tickets in a foyer in a cinema, and how we all have our cycles in life. And Athel must have been, when he wrote that, experiencing the feel of those cycles as well. I mean, all of us who have been around since the 60s and 70s are feeling the pain of arthritis and all of those kind of things. You know, and just to feel Athel's experience of life being put into those plays. And he writes from his own life and from his own pain and from his own processes. And the one thing about Athel, though, that I do know is, for instance, Manny said the other day, the one thing about Athel was, to I think probably his very last day, he was interested. He was interested in other people, interested in other people's lives, asking questions, always searching, always digging, always scratching below the surface and wanting to know how people are feeling their lives. And Mandy saw him just a little while ago, 2 weeks ago, I think, and was, I phoned him on the way back from visiting Ethel, and Mandy was enchanted. He said, oh, you know, Ethel is still Ethel, the man that Mandy admired, that we all admired. And so we know that Ethel kept going right the way along.
I'm going to take another break. We have to pay obeisance to the gods of ICASA and sponsors. And so we shall.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
All right, am I live yet? We are live. Okay, here we are. I'm Brooke Spector, your host of the Deep Dive, and really special guest today, Janice Honeyman, actress, director, playwright of a sort, with all those wonderful pantomimes that she's adapted from the British stage to local circumstances, taking the Mickey out of all manner of people, gently but clearly, so that they know who's being picked on. But we're not talking about her work particularly. We're talking about the work of the entire body of work that came from the pen of Ethel Fugard, whom almost everybody will agree is and was South Africa's preeminent playwright, and by many estimations, and you see it in the world press, one of the great playwrights in English of the 20th century, universally. And that means Britain, the US, anywhere else. And the range of work goes across the entire spectrum of human interactions. One of the things that that I found particularly interesting, and you just said it just before our bit of an extended break, was the way in which he looked at anybody he met to sort of open them up a little bit to see if there was something he could find in them that he could pull out, store away and use for another day. And I had a conversation with David Smith, the Guardian correspondent who was here for many years and now is in the US. And he said when he interviewed Ethel Fugard, he found a very genial, warm, entertaining man who wanted to know about him rather than simply just be interviewed. And so obviously, right through his life, he was interested in drawing out other people and finding about their conflicts, their hopes, their desires, their disappointments, and all the things that make up human nature. What do you, given all of these things that we're saying, what is his impact now for younger playwrights, for younger audiences who clearly did not participate or live in the times that he wrote most about, the segregation of the apartheid era, because we're now decades past that point. Does his work still have that resonance for people?
Brooke, I think that his work is still and will always be unbelievably relevant and important to our society. And I'll tell you why. Apart from teaching young playwrights to look into the personal, to add body and weight and personal interest to their work, and to not just be bland and tub-thumping and slamming out the message, to actually find the subtlety and the identity points for audiences that make their plays. You know, what's the point of theatre if it's not reflecting life and if it's not reflecting something that can change an audience? And that's not just screaming at them, that's making them feel emotionally something that shifts them, that they go into the theatre as one person and come out with a mind shift, with a change, with something that's been given to them. And the only way you can do that is to be giving them something honestly. And Athol always did that. So I think that it, young playwrights can be taught to have a broader look at life than just to be standing for one principle or one, you know, be it fees must fall or be it, you know, whatever the message is these days, whether it's woke, whatever it is. So that's for the playwrights themselves, is tell real stories honestly. But for young audiences, I mean, you know, these days one can go into a class of young people and say to them, today's Youth Day, what does that mean to you? And we can go to the shops, we can go to the malls, we can go and buy things, we can go and eat pizza. And you go, no, but what is it? Apartheid. What's apartheid? What's about? What? Sorry. And they do not know the history of this country. And what Athol's plays do is, in a personal and very committed way, tell us the stories of this country. And when you understand the stories and you understand the past, you will have the base that you're on at the moment, which gives you a firm foundation to look into the future. And I believe that Athol's work, apart from it being wonderful theatre and should be performed often and performed with live books so that you don't get a sore bum or sore back, if we can present it, you know, with the reality and the honesty that we need to keep you intrigued, I believe that it is fantastic educational theatre for young people because it will give them that insight into their past and where they come from.
You're absolutely right. I've actually been in performances in which most of the audience was like half my age, basically. And they laughed at the right places, and they, you know, you could hear them sort of inhale at all the other ones. Like, whoa, how did that work? What is that all? Whoa, goodness sake. Yeah. And when it's funny, it's funny. I mean, some of his lines are very funny. And absolutely. I guess they're designed to get a laugh out of people. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back after this message, and we'll finish up our conversation with director extraordinaire Janice Honeyman, actress and thinker about things on the theater.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back with the last bits of our deep dive program. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and I'm really, really pleased and delighted. I guess you can be pleased or you can be delighted, but I'm both. Janice Honeyman is our guest today, and we're talking a little bit about her work, which has been considerable over the years, and a lot about somebody who was important in her life and the life of this country, Athol Fugard. Man who passed away at the age of 92 just the other day, and who wrote dozens of plays that have had an impact on this country and, let's say, around the world. People compare him to playwrights like Arthur Miller as among the most important, most influential playwrights in the English language for the 20th century. Something that's plagued me for years, and I wrote about it 7 years ago, actually, that of all the people that I could think of who were writers in the world, the one who most approached the legacy terms of requirement for Nobel Prize for Literature, which stipulates that the writer must be a person whose writing approaches the ideal. And yet Athol Fugard doesn't figure in the list of people who won that award. And now, sadly, it's too late to nominate him. Janice, your reaction to that? I mean, what happened? Why was he not sort of swept up as a great, quote unquote?
There was a year, and I can't remember which year it was, but when Athol, apart from Shakespeare, was the most performed playwright in the world. Hmm. Now, surely that says that it's not specifically the South African problem that is what Athol was writing about. Athol was writing about something much broader, much more relevant to humans all over, universally much more relevant. And I believe that Athol wrote from love. And if the Nobel Prize is about ideals and about peace and about love, Athol absolutely should have qualified every time he wrote a new play, because Athol did write, you mentioned it earlier, Athol didn't write from anger. He wrote from love. He wrote from indignation. He wrote from outrage at situations, but he wrote from a point of love and a point of understanding. And I absolutely believe that he should have been a Nobel Prize winner for literature at some point in his career, because it was worth it, and his work is worth it. And I think we should champion a posthumous award, Nobel Prize.
I drew up a list of some extraordinary names who deserved posthumous awards now that they are no longer among us. And the list of such names is startling in its impact and importance. And clearly, his name belongs there. At one point, of course, there was a theater in his name in Cape Town, which closed during the COVID pandemic, sadly. Beautiful building, nicely organized, did some exciting theater. And unfortunately, it no longer represents his theatrical output. There needs at some point now to be a real effort to not simply just name a street or a boulevard or a traffic circle after him. Somehow there has to be created a way of building on the memory, whether it's an annual award for best writing or whether it's a continuing yearly cycle of performances of plays, an annual colloquy which discusses its current relevance. Something has to be done. I'm encouraging you as a leading practitioner of this arcane art form to start beating that drum along with me. We can get something accomplished on this score.
I'm listening, Brooks. I'm listening. I'm noting. I'm taking note. And I have already anticipated exactly that. And I believe that I will campaign for it for next year. I think we should really, scholarships and festivals and really keeping Athol in the public eye, because he's worth it. And he should be honored.
Mark me down as somebody who will be happy to support this endeavor in almost any way we can think of. I'm not a millionaire, but I do have access to some writing occasionally. This has been a wonderful opportunity to speak to the Janice. I really do appreciate your taking the time to come on air with us. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and our guest today was Janice Honeyman. We were talking about the late, great Athol Fugard, who passed away very recently, March 9th. If you didn't get a chance to hear this program in its entirety today, I have learned, to my surprise and delight, that it is rebroadcast on Sundays at 10 o'clock. So if you want to listen to it all over again, there it is. And if you caught the last bits, you get to hear it right from the start. This has been The Deep Dive, and your host was Brooke Spector, and our special guest was Janice Honeyman. But looming in the background, the shade of Athol Fugard was, in effect, our guest as well. Thank you, and you all have a good weekend, and we'll be back again next week.